Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
And I managed to impress her. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, July 12th. I thought I'd surprise you today.
Did you see my eyes?
Yeah, right? You didn't expect that, right?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's real. So today, Rachel is officially with the show. And like we didn't know you would be, right?
It is official. It's officially official.
Officially. So the name of the show has changed. Our pictures have changed. And everything is set for
good.
The new stuff.
It looks good.
Right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the station, Rachel.
Thank you.
We love having you. And
love being here.
You're now part of the history.
Part of the fam.
Of the future and the history of the station.
There you go.
Once you leave your mark here, it never goes away. You
awesome.
Know?
Perfect.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm living.
Yeah?
I got my glasses on.
Yeah, I've never seen you with glasses.
I know.
So you normally wear contacts?
I normally wear contacts, but, you know, just there's some days where I'm just like, I just don't.
I know you want to give your eyes a break.
Yeah, so
I know,
and plus I think, you know, people assume that I'm like so much smarter with my glasses on. So I'm gonna wear it.
I guess people do, right?
Right.
I know some people actually wear glasses that have no prescription in them,
yeah.
Right? So just so the
I don't
for
know
the look.
Why people do that. But yeah, I guess look, for the
you
look.
Know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You look smart. I'm like, thanks.
Exactly.
I play the part
right.
Well.
I know. Take my glasses away anytime. I don't want them. For crying out loud, you know? I hate glasses, but I've tried every other alternative and they don't work.
My mom had to wear glasses like as a kid and I hated it. So
yeah.
I would throw them in the washing machine and my mom would always find them.
Oh,
I don't
God.
Know how they got there. Couldn't see.
Yeah, I can imagine as a kid it would be kind of traumatic because mm-hmm. kids make fun of you and
yeah,
stuff,
I just,
right?
I also like was, I just like looked like a little boy for like several years as a
really?
Kid and just adding the glasses just didn't, it didn't help my cause,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. So.
Were you tomboyish growing up?
I was
up?
Such a tomboy.
Really?
Oh, man, I hated wearing dresses. Hated it. I have pictures of me in dresses, and I feel uncomfortable looking at me in pictures
right.
of dresses.
I know. With my daughter, I know we try to make her so feminine, always with headbands
no.
and all this mm-hmm. stuff, and she turned out very tomboyish.
Yeah.
So it's in the genes, I think.
Even
right?
now, I mean, I won't, the first, like, if I have to dress up nice somewhere, I won't immediately go to a dress. I'll wear a skirt or something mm-hmm. a little bit more functional. For
yeah,
me.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, now you can select what you
right.
choose, you know. You don't have that
mm-hmm.
pressure,
mm-hmm.
that social pressure and everything, you know. So in a few moments, we're going to talk to our guest who's sitting here patiently, and we're going to have a very entertaining show. Did you hear about Amazon's Prime Day yesterday? Everybody was talking about it. When you're an Amazon Prime member, you get like free shipping, two-day
oh, wow.
shipping usually, and you get like a whole library of movies like Netflix.
That's
for
true.
Free.
I did. I recently downloaded Amazon Prime so I could watch. I don't know if you remember the show Unsolved Mysteries.
I do remember
okay,
that.
Okay,
yeah.
I was like obsessed with that show
really?
As a kid, and like I don't even think they make new episodes anymore. But I was like, I really just want to watch the reruns of Unsolved Mysteries, and they're only available on Amazon.
On Amazon
yeah.
Prime. Wow. Yeah, but it's worth it. I mean, for what is it, $99 now? I think they raised it to $129. Maybe they put it back, but turned it back. But the thing is, apparently, so they had like a special day, like Black Friday or Cyber
mm-hmm.
Monday, whatever. But apparently, their sales were up 60% compared to last year when they did the same thing.
What was the deal, though?
The deal is you get a lot of deals
okay.
for a lot less money.
Right.
So. Yes,
but that's the future. I mean, brick and mortars are shutting down and retail stores are closing, like, you know, physical shops are closing because the future is shopping online.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Makes
which
sense.
I'm not happy about because, you know, we don't have any retail outlets anymore for
right.
anything. You
I mean,
know?
I just like to try. I like to try on clothes.
Right.
You know, and then I don't want to wait, get the clothes, find out they don't fit. Send
right,
back,
right.
Wait again. You know?
And even with things that are packaged like books or, you know, music, whatever, or something that you would find, you know, anywhere, you'd find it cheaper online. And how mm-hmm. can you justify, you know?
Right.
I mean, I go to the bookstore, I find a cool book. I'm like, good, I'll pay for it here so I can help the store survive. But it's $30. You know, on Amazon, you'll get it for $15.
I know.
How can you justify spending that kind of money?
I know.
You know, so we're responsible for it, you know, for making all these stores disappear. But how do you stop? It's like we're addicted to cheaper prices and convenience and everything, you know.
I mean, I think also just for the on the retail side, they'll probably see the benefit of them. Like, they just have to adapt to what the times are, and maybe it'll be better for them, a better business, to just go online and adapt to the trends that are happening.
Right.
So.
No, they obviously will, but I think as consumers, we're suffering from that.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't have a lot to choose from as far as retail, and that sucks, man. Because we used to go to the mall. When my kids were little, mm-hmm. they'd have bookstores and record stores and video yeah. stores and places for kids to play.
That's why I love farmers markets, because you can still find all that stuff, all that nostalgia at farmers markets mm-hmm. for very cheap.
That's true. That might be the future of retail.
I love farmers. local pop-ups, they're you find some great things at those places. I know.
So, yeah, but Amazon made a lot of money and we didn't, so there you go. Also, before we get to our guest, I wanted to bring this up. You're going to like this one. A Spanish airline was fined for making female applicants take a pregnancy test. So, in other words, if you're a female, you're going to work at that airline, they want you to take a pregnancy test. So, that sounds pretty sexist, right? But the airline says that the test was meant to protect women from risks to their pregnancy. So
you can fly up until a certain term in your
right
pregnancy, right?
Right, that seems, right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a private company, so they can do whatever they want, right?
Right, exactly. You know, but the thing is,
it is a little is that the proper term, infringing upon? But it's like the same as it's not the same, but it's like drug testing.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it is drug testing, but here you're picking out only women, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, that's pretty bad, you know. Mm-hmm. But it might sound like they're doing this so they don't have to pay you for pregnancy benefits and all that stuff, you know. So
that probably sounds right.
Yeah, so that's probably why they're doing it, you know. But it's probably not illegal, but it definitely is not the right thing to do, I don't think. Not in today's world, anyway. Okay, well, that's it for as far as things that don't matter. Now we're going to get to things that do matter. We're joined by Mr. Paul Dooley, an actor and I guess entertainer extraordinaire. Can we say that?
That's what I call myself.
Okay.
Self-proclaimed.
I feel kind of dumb this morning. I'm not wearing glasses.
Okay. Okay. You want mine?
No.
Okay. No. The amazing thing is that you come in here, and the first thing that occurred to me is this man looks nice and fit and healthy, and then I'm looking up online and I see your age, and I'm like, wow, been very fortunate. You've been very fortunate.
He looks great for 45.
He looks great, exactly. For 45.
What's great is in casting, if they think I'm 70,
really,
I'm in my 80s, well, then I can work more.
Yeah. Right.
Longer. I am fairly fit. I go to Pilates twice a week. I do physical therapy twice a week.
Wow. Now, did you always do that?
No, I really wasn't always athletic or anything.
Right.
But as I began to get older, it's kind of preventative more than anything.
Right.
Just so that you maintain where you are.
Absolutely. You know, because my parents were never active, and now, you know, my dad, well, he's got Parkinson's, but still definitely not walking straight by himself, able to live like a normal person, man. So you've had quite a journey, and whatever you did growing up, it must have worked, you know?
Well, you know, I grew up in the Depression, and we had a very big garden. The garden was four or five times the size of our house, and we ate out of that garden, and we had to save money. My father had his pay cut, and he didn't get fired in the Depression, but he got half pay.
Wow.
So
for the same amount of work, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But instead of firing them, they ask everybody if they'd take a cut.
Right.
So we didn't buy much meat. So without knowing the word for it, we were vegetarians. But uh-huh. we hadn't ate very well because everything's fresh from the garden.
Oh, wow.
Then in the fall, you can some of that and save it for the winter, you know, in vacuum-packed cans. So you can have tomatoes and you know, we used to have a big box of apples in the basement and potatoes. And
so you ate healthy. I mean, that's healthy, you know. I mean, today kids grow up on fast food and everything, and it's like, you know, no wonder we get so much, disease.
Disease and sickness.
Yeah, you know.
Well, there's a lot of frying going on and, you know, and French fries, you know, and all that.
Yeah.
I didn't know what French fries were. I didn't know what fast food was.
And so tell us, where did you grow up? Where were you born and raised?
I was born in West Virginia.
In West Virginia?
Yeah.
And that's where you were raised as well?
Yep.
And
until I was 17, I went to the Navy and then to college, and pretty much I was there for my growing up.
Wow. Do you have any siblings?
I have one of each, but they both passed away.
I see. So, so growing up, I mean, in the Depression, it's fascinating to me, you know, to think of what life was like. So, I mean, did you grow up, were you poor? I mean,
we were poor.
Many people were poor.
We were poor without knowing it.
Right.
You know, you look around at your neighbors, it's depression for all of them. We're not really middle class or lower class.
Right.
Working class. But, you know, you didn't know that when you were a kid if everybody else was doing the same thing.
Yeah, right.
It didn't seem like you were deprived. I mean, we wouldn't go to the movies often because it probably cost a dime or something.
Right.
Super expensive.
But that's right. When you grow up and you're a kid, you don't know any better. You don't know any different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You figure this is how things should be.
Right.
The amazing thing for me when I talk to seniors is how many changes you've seen going on in the world. I mean, I'm 57. I remember, before there were television had just come out a few days before I was born. But, those were like totally different times. So I've seen the world change, you know, with technology and culture and all that. And yet you've seen so much more.
Right.
I mean, you've been through the war, World War II, right? And all the other wars and everything. That's interesting. How old were you when the war broke? Do you remember?
When I was in high school, the war was on.
Okay.
As I talk about on my show, my friends were being drafted and just out of high school.
Wow.
And I said, well, it looks like I may be next. So to avoid the Army, I joined the Navy. I said, there may not be so many people shooting at you in the Navy.
Right.
And then I was no sooner in than the war ended. And then I was stuck for 2 years. I only did that because I didn't really want to go to the Army and dig a foxhole or anything.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed being on a ship. We went back and forth between Oakland and Japan and China and the Philippines and Hawaii.
Wow.
Wow.
And so you were in the Pacific pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. Wow, you know, I mean, that's, you know, this is stuff we only see in movies.
I feel like it's another
another
place in time, but there was
no television at that time.
No television.
I fell in love with radio and all those great old radio comedians like Jack Benny and all those people.
Wow, so that was the form of entertainment at the time, right? The family would sit around the radio in the living room.
That's
and
right. And for some reason, they looked at the radio.
right? Well, you have to look at something, right?
Like maybe if you stare at it long enough, it'll start producing pictures, right?
Yeah, but that's
I never thought about being an actor, but I fell in love with these comedians and almost obsessively studied their jokes and remembered them. And
really? At a young age?
A very, very young age. And I don't know why. It was just a groove in my brain. You know, some kids will know every statistics for baseball.
Right.
Well, I did that with comedians and
I love
jokes.
That.
Really?
I love that.
You need to do that, too.
No,
right?
I was the same way. I was always mimicking or doing voices or imitating people. Like
really?
That. I was the same. Yeah.
Do you do any good voices?
Not
you're proud
I mean,
of?
No, nothing.
No,
I'm proud
no
of,
impressions.
None that I'm proud of. But okay, like as a kid, I was breaking out impressions all the time. And my mom, she's my mom, so she'll say, these are great, but you know, I'm sure they're awful, right?
Especially as a kid trying to do an adult or something.
Well, sometimes the parents will say, come on, that's stupid, stop that.
Yeah, exactly.
Depends.
So we're joined by Paul Dooley. You're an actor, writer, and comedian, and we'll get to all your career. But I'm really fascinated by it. It's almost like you come from a different world.
A different
world. You know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel like both of you can say that. You know?
Thank you, God.
No, I don't mean it. I don't mean like a, I don't I mean it in a mean. Bad way at all. I just, I feel like I can only imagine that by the time I get to right. your guys' age, what I will be saying,
it'll
you know,
be
by
amazing.
The time I get to it'll 40 all, and 40.
Oh different. My God.
You
yeah.
know, 42, I, yeah. You know, like, you. Or 40. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Well, look
out,
how
but,
fast technology is moving.
Right.
I mean, in yeah. 10 years, it'll be new. In 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll have your own TV set in your ear or something.
Yeah. Right. I mean, internet access in amazing. Your brain and stuff.
Exactly.
You know?
You'll think it and it'll pop. You know what I mean? It'll be like yeah. that movie. Have you seen that show, Black Mirror?
Yes.
Yeah.
It, yes. Yeah. It's frightening.
We've talked future. About yeah, all yeah. the stuff yeah. That they do there every episode.
So realistic.
In fact, it's so realistic and scary and gloomy that I decided I don't watch it anymore after four episodes.
It's frightening.
I decided it's too real,
but
and I
scary.
Don't want to deal with that mm-hmm. kind of a future, you know. But for those
sometimes,
of you,
sometimes you know, TV writers and. Invent situations which actually then occur later.
I feel like that happens so much. Like it's almost like the what came first, the chicken or the egg? And I feel like the media sometimes does perpetuate things yeah. happening.
Right.
I mean, we have these cultural norms that we or these ideas that through the media and the movies that we grow up that we think are how it's supposed to be.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Well, if you think way back to Twilight Zone,
yes,
Rod Serling was doing that, imagining mm-hmm. futures when. The cities had nothing. There were no more books, you know, mm-hmm. and some of
I remember
it was amazing
that.
Writing yeah. at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy. Remember, yeah, that was Burgess Meredith with the books. Remember that one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
have you ever watched Twilight Zone? If
I,
you want to add to your culture,
I know.
Watch
yeah,
some.
The old, is it in black and white?
It is.
Yeah.
It is with Rod Serling.
But did they remake it?
They did, but nothing
they made
even
a movie
close.
Of it once, too.
Yeah, yeah, a movie. But it's nothing like the original.
Is it like Black Mirror, but of back in the day?
Yeah, yeah, something
that
like that.
It?
It's stories that have like that. Each episode stands on its
right.
own. It's stories always to learn something from, you know.
Wow.
And yeah, so it wasn't always as scary, but things to think about, you know,
right.
and always twists and. It was amazing, yeah. So even if you just catch a couple of episodes, you'll
yeah.
see. And remember many many big actors or people that later became big actors were on the show.
Oh,
that's
wow.
right.
On different
yeah.
episodes
it was
and stuff,
a
you know?
Go-to show when you were, even if you were a movie actor, everybody said, oh, I should do one of those.
Right, right.
He was a kind of a brilliant writer ahead of his time.
He really was. And it's interesting to watch now how he stands up with a cigarette and everything. It's like today, nobody would, you know, be caught dead with a cigarette on,
wow.
on camera.
I
know?
Used to do cigarette commercials years ago.
Did you really?
Oh,
nobody realized they were harmful.
Yeah.
Remember they used to have advertisements in magazines.
Yeah.
All
and
over,
they took,
yeah.
yeah, I remember, like, I
No, in magazines, they still do, though. You mean for cigarettes? Yeah, back pages and stuff all the time.
I've never seen enough.
Well,
I think
tried
they made
to
it illegal.
I mean, they don't show them smoking, if that's
oh,
what you mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they put like
they
pictures of
horses.
They show
how much horses. Fun you have with it.
Right.
Right, like they show
I remember
horses.
When they first
like
came out.
Like Marlboro.
I remember yeah. they first came out with something called Virginia Slims.
Yeah.
Like, women can smoke too, you know.
Right, right.
It's just a gimmick, really.
It was like...
I know, but to be honest with you, I've read about this in marketing books, and actually Marlboro and Virginia Slims were aimed at men in the beginning. And, well, Marlboro, okay, but Virginia Slims was aimed at men in the beginning, and then they changed. They're like, how do we get this to sell more? So it was a marketing idea. Let's
oh,
market
wow.
it to women.
That's
and
right.
then, like Paul said, they're like, yeah, women can smoke too, you know, and it mm-hmm. looks sexy and all that stuff. But
you can get cancer also.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Equal opportunity.
I got a call once. I never smoked in my life. I got a call from the agent and said, this is a cigarette commercial. You want to go for it? And I said, sure, because actors always say everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
say,
right.
can you ride a horse? Oh, yeah. They get the job. Then
so you never
it.
Say no, right?
Yeah, right?
Okay, that's a good lesson.
So I didn't know how to smoke, and I bought a pack the night before, and I didn't want to inhale and start coughing in an audition. So I took a puff and tried to inhale. I seemed to get around the idea of coughing by just really relaxing and breathing easy.
Wow.
So I found I could inhale and not cough and not ruin it. But at home and even in the audition, I was looking over the copy, and when I went to the audition, I took a puff and I looked lovingly at the cigarette, just so I didn't have to take more puffs.
Right.
So I looked at it and I smiled and I looked up to heaven like, wow, this is great. So in the audition, I only took two or three puffs. Uh-huh. Well, as they looked at the tape, they fell in love with the idea that I was in love with the cigarette.
Right.
With all this, you know, having a love affair with my face.
Right.
So I got the job and it played for a year and it was very popular. And cab drivers used to say to me, oh, you're Harvey. That was the name of the guy.
Yeah.
Because there was three people at a sports event. And one says, Ken's cigarettes are great. Pass it on. And you're passing it down the line.
Uh-huh.
And I say, Ken's cigarettes are great. That says, Harvey loves Ken's cigarettes. Harvey loves Ken's cigarettes. I said, Harvey loves, oh, wait, I'm Harvey. What I love is a great taste of Kent.
Wow. Yeah, right? Well, but you never liked smoking. You never
even tried it.
Good for you. Good
and
for
I don't
you.
Drink, so I'm an odd person in show business.
Well, yeah, odd in that way, but that's what I'm saying. Again, look, you reached a respectable age. You're walking. You're healthy. I mean, I really admire that. And I never really realized that until my parents started aging, and I see how people can become so frail and everything. But you're here to show that if you live healthy, you can live healthy
and
for
I'm
a long time.
I'm an example to young actors because I never made a movie until I was 49 years
wow.
old.
Wow.
Really?
Then I made about 60 movies.
Really? So how did that happen?
That's
I mean,
goals.
You said you went to college. Where did you go to college?
In my home state, West Virginia.
Oh, wow. And I would imagine at the time it was a pretty... Wasn't it unusual for people to go to college? I mean, not everybody was able to, right?
Well, I was only able to go because of being in the services. Mm-hmm. The GI,
oh, that's right.
The
yeah.
GI Bill gave you free college.
Right.
But I lived on $66 a month that they sent me
yeah.
in those days. It was
wow.
the late 40s, early 50s. One of my classmates was Don Knotts.
Really?
Yeah, and he was just as funny then as
yeah,
he was
he's
later.
Very funny.
And we worked together a little in college, although... He was a senior and I was a freshman.
Yeah.
But he had gone to the service, and if they think you've had a little entertainment experience, and he was just entertaining when he was from the time he was 14 until he was 18.
Really?
He had a ventriloquist doll and magic tricks. And so they put you in a thing called special services, and then instead of going to fight somebody in the war, you entertained the other soldiers.
I see.
Oh,
so
wow.
He spent 2 whole years traveling around camps.
Is that USO or whatever they call it?
It's sort of like that, yeah.
Okay.
That's so
okay.
Cool.
All they had to do was entertain
yeah.
while being a soldier.
Oh,
it didn't
wow.
have to shoot anybody.
Yeah, right.
And
that's
you
great.
Learn a great deal if you do it steadily for 2 years.
Right,
that's
right.
Great. He was a great guy.
Yeah, Don Knotts, one of my favorites. I mean, he just looks funny. And I remember he was, and then he came on Three's Company, which was a very popular comedy in the 70s, 80s. And but he's done like a million movies and everything.
Yeah,
he's just
Disney.
A very funny
Disney
looking.
Kind of, Disney kind of picked him up and he left Mayberry, you know, the show with Andy Griffith. And he did a whole series of funny shows, movies, some with Tim Conway. You know,
yeah.
Mr. Chicken. And
right.
They were just broad comedies, but he was a wonderful humorous guy.
Yeah, yeah. Rachel, are we losing you with all
no,
the these are ancient people.
No, I'm so fascinated by hearing about all these stories.
I know. I'm like feeling ancient.
No,
what is this?
You know,
I think it's great.
The reason I had such a late entry into films is when you live in New York, as I did, most films are made out here. I pay about 95%
yeah.
of them, or on location. But even if they come to New York, they bring their actors, their supporting players and their stars, and just hire someone in New York for what they call a day player. You work 1 or 2 days. So they're not great roles or anything. So actors in New York, if they're not in the theater or not on Broadway or off Broadway, and even then rates are much, much lower than in the other media. So a lot of people try to make commercials, and that became kind of my real career.
Mm.
I do a number of plays every year, but you make $30 a week.
Wow.
But then I lucked into doing a lot of commercials because I had a kind of a waspy look.
Yeah.
And at the time I started doing commercials, nobody talked about it, but there were no blacks, there were no Italians, there were no
mm-hmm.
Jewish people on commercials. Very, very, you know, very, you know.
Waspy.
Very white.
The old American
yeah.
thing. So I could be the guy who sold the thing. I'd buy the thing. I'm the husband. I'm the guy next door. I'm the uncle. Because it was a kind of a wasp look.
Right.
So that kind of helped me. I do a lot of commercials, and I did about over 300 on cameras
wow.
in 15 years.
Wow!
And that pays the bills pretty nicely.
Pretty darn
right?
good.
Yeah, pretty good. So at a certain point, you decided, what, you're going to get into movies now?
I didn't. It wasn't a conscious decision.
It wasn't.
There's a famous cartoonist named Jules Feiffer who wrote the movie Popeye, among other things, and quite a number of movies and plays. But he was famous for doing a comic strip in the Village Voice for 40 years. He's very well known. I was in an evening of comic strips brought to life by a company of actors. And Robert Altman, the film director, came to see it, and he hired me within 3 days to be in my first big movie and had a big part. And Carol Burnett was my wife.
Oh, wow.
Called A Wedding. Then he went on to do 5 movies in a row with me. And he sort of converted me from a New York stage actor and a commercial actor to being in films, and other people in films recognized me.
Very cool.
So then I started working a lot.
And then you moved here?
A little later, I moved here.
Right.
Because Altman would hire me no matter where I lived.
Really?
Wow.
Well, very interesting.
Once
right?
I was part of his rep company,
he
just called me up. We got another one.
Yeah. Can you imagine saying I worked with Robert Altman, for crying out loud? I mean, that's a big deal. That's a very big deal.
Well, he was my benefactor.
Really? Wow. How
well, they
cool
figured
is that?
if he had faith in me, I guess I could act.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So you discovered that you had the talent for it and everything. And so you decided, what, you're going to move here and pursue a career in acting? And
well, I didn't really move here on purpose, but I had auditioned out here for a series. It was called Coming of Age. It was I was 60, and it was about a sunshine village down in Phoenix where everybody was retired, except I hated it. I went kicking and screaming into retirement.
Love it.
So the guy was a curmudgeon who hated plaid pants and lime colored. He didn't like golf. He just hated it all. Didn't like golf carts. But it only ran about 19 episodes. But I was here, and my wife, who was a writer but has not yet done much, sent a sample script, a spec script, and we know that that's a million and one shot that you'll ever get anything out of it because everybody's doing it, to the 30-something office as well. It turns out instead of a few scenes, she wrote like a 52-minute episode using their characters. And they were floored. They loved her. They hired her to be on staff.
Wow.
And so without being in the Writers Guild or having an agent, she was suddenly working on a popular show with great writing and great acting and directing.
Yeah.
Then we said, well, we shouldn't go back to New York. You have a career now, and this is where the movies are. So that's why we stayed.
Yeah, yeah. That's usually the story, you know. But sometimes people just realize that if I want to be working, this is where I need to be.
Absolutely.
Very cool. So it's a very interesting story that you started your career at a later age. So you were doing commercials all this time? Is that how you were?
Yeah, and I did a lot of off-Broadway plays, and I was in The Odd Couple on Broadway with Walter Matthau and Art Carney.
Right.
And so I did a lot of work on the stage, but generally speaking, it doesn't pay as much as commercials.
As commercials, right?
So I really, you know, had to tell myself that 85% of my income is from commercials. Right. I'm really in commercials.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But So I was doing
Rachel,
well.
Rachel, you wouldn't argue with having something
taking,
like that,
I'm
right?
taking notes.
Yeah.
Literally, I'm like, commercials,
there you go. I'll take
movies,
commercials any
you know,
day.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. It
one day
the
my
bills.
Agent told me, said, I know you do a lot of on cameras. If you become a voiceover actor, you may do 2 sessions a day or 3 sessions a day. With a commercial, you spend all day making one commercial. So I didn't think I had the right kind of voice, but he convinced me that the voices were changing in radio from those guys who sounded like announcers to average people. Right. So then I started making tons of voiceovers. And then at one point, I got into radio, which is why I love this stuff. Uh-huh. And over a 15-year period, I did about 1,000 radio commercials.
Oh, wow.
And I not only did them, but I set up a little company with 2 friends from Second City, and we wrote them. We were paid as actors and writers.
Very
it was
nice.
Called Oliver Creation because we were directors, writers, actors. Huh. And we did that endlessly until I moved out here where I more concentrated on television and movies. Right. But I love radio.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
Rachel,
why?
You see, this is like a dream. No, go ahead.
There's no makeup, no wardrobe, no Winnebago.
Right.
No waiting.
You just show up.
That's true. And on the other end of it, there's the listeners that you don't have to sit there and actually watch for a whole hour. You can be doing other things and listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why I love radio, because
People driving.
Yeah, and people driving, your imagination and everything. So that's very cool, you know. And you grew up with radio, and that's what we were talking about.
I listened to Red Skelton and Jimmy Durant. He was on radio.
Right.
George Burns and Gracie Allen. And I talk about all of this in my show, my influences and what caused me to want to be in show business.
Yeah.
Radio and then early television. Someone great like Sid Caesar, you remember him.
He was
fantastic.
Yeah.
And Jackie Gleason. But, you know, my main source of inspiration was at 15, I saw some old silent movies just on someone's little 8mm screen, and it was Keaton and Chaplin.
Oh, my God. And have you ever seen Charlie Chaplin movie?
Of course.
You have, right?
Yeah.
Like the silent ones.
And I was more impressed by Buster Keaton than anybody, and I loved him, and I thought, that's when I want to become an actor.
Wow, very cool.
Now, so in my show, the big high point is that 30 years later, I meet him, and I do a commercial with him for 2 days.
Oh, wow.
So it's like meeting a legend.
And you have obviously worked with a lot of big names, so cool.
I worked with Pacino and all those people.
Yeah. You know, as we were talking about old radio and stuff, I remember, I mean, do you remember the Orson Welles thing?
End of the World, War of the World, or whatever.
War of the World. Yeah,
there
you go.
I went to school.
Yeah,
you went. Communications.
History.
You had to study that one.
And he was 23 or something when that happened. He was a genius. He did Citizen Kane. Thought it was maybe the best picture ever made when it was maybe 25.
Right. And most people are saying that. I've never seen it. I've seen it. Really?
Yeah, I took a film
class. It is quite
You're
wonderful.
Qualified.
Nowadays, I think people say Godfather's maybe the winner, you know.
Right.
But all my life, I've loved him, and he's a theme through my show. I talk about him all the time.
Really? Yeah. How interesting. Because the reason I brought him up is because on radio, he created this whole panic of people actually believed that Martians landed here and there was
a
war and everything. Yeah, people really believed it.
Even though he did a disclaimer at the top of it.
Yeah.
But some people tune in a little
later. It's the original fake news.
Yeah. There you go, right?
Causing
panic and everything. Wow.
Well, I also, in my show, have about a 4-minute silent movie, because when I fell in love with Keaton, my friends and I would go out and make silent movies and throw custard pies and have chases and canes and derbies and all that. And although we were like 1/1000th as good as those great masters, they really look like really old time movies, and show part of it in my show, and people are kind of amazed.
That's awesome.
So
that's
cool.
You?
Yeah, right?
19 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Well, we are going to talk quite a bit about your show, but I do want to go a little bit over your earlier career and everything. I mean, you've had some major roles, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know Breaking Away. I sort of remember that. That was a 1979 movie. Remind us what this was about. It was like about some boys, right? And
it's
growing up and things.
Four high school guys who got out of school had no idea what they were going to do. And one of them, Dennis Quaid, one of his first movies, had been a quarterback in school, and now he's nothing. You know, he feels he's nothing.
Right.
And they're listless. They don't know where they're going to work, get a job. They don't have a college degree yet. And it's in a college town, so the college kids look down on these townies, you know. And I play the father of one of them who loves biking so much that he admires the Italians who were the great bikers, you know, in when they would have races. So he began singing opera and shaving his legs to go faster.
Really?
And his father hates it, you know. His father is like, stop that, you know. And the whole thing, his father's very cranky and the audience is with him. But when he starts this race and begins to win the race, the father suddenly kind of converts and peels out of his used car lot and goes to the stadium and cheers his son on, and he wins the big race.
Oh, wow, nice.
This was a very, 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 it was a sleeper, but a very big hit at the time it came out.
Right.
And people still see it all the time on television.
Yeah.
And I still get jobs from that movie because that was such a great script.
Wow.
Won the Oscar for the script.
Really?
And people who I meet who are film directors who have gone to film school have seen this movie. This is one of those movies that you see. They say, oh, my God, we love that movie. You were terrific. I don't always get the job.
But
it's a great way to say hello.
Exactly.
And I do get lots. I still get jobs from it. That's amazing.
Really? You're a part of it, you know, and that's the thing. Now, there's also 16 Candles, And I wanted to bring this up because I remember those movies when they were making all the Molly Ringwald and Andrew McCarthy movies and all that.
John Hughes?
Yes.
Director.
Director. So tell us how you got that role. That was a 1984 movie, 16 Candles.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that was about teenagers, right? Again, and you were her father.
Yeah.
So what was that role like for you?
Well, what's interesting is that Breaking Away had just come out, and I had gotten really tremendous reviews, and it really boosted me up the ladder a few rungs, and I got a new agent who was at the time the biggest agent in New York. And he said, you know, don't take any small parts now. Just look for a good character part, a supporting part, which has something to play,
right,
something to get your teeth into. So I go to a meeting with John Hughes, and he said, I want you to do the father in this movie. I wrote it for you, he said.
Really?
Because he had seen Breaking Away.
Oh, wow. How cool is
that?
And
I went home and read it and everything, but I told my agent, I talked to my agent, and he says, I think we should pass because the parents are only there in the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes.
Right.
And for an hour and 20 minutes in the movie, you're not there.
Yeah.
So I turned it down in a typical Hollywood fashion. They raised the offer, the price. Then I turned it down again. They raised the price again.
They really wanted you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... the director was, what the heck am I thinking? Oh, John Hughes.
John Hughes, right.
And he already wrote it for me, he said, and he was a fan of mine. But finally they got the idea that I didn't want to do it. So then a month goes by, and there were no other great meaty roles coming along. And John Hughes called and said, look, I've written this scene in the middle of the movie. It's kind of an important scene. And I just did it so you'd be in our movie.
So
I caved in.
Look
and it's
that.
A scene every young girl who comes up to me on the street knows, because he apologizes to her in the middle of the night. I'm sorry we forgot your birthday. You know how much I love you. It's a very touching scene. And to this day, people talk to me about that scene.
Really?
It's such a good movie.
And my theory is every year, a new crop of 16-year-olds come along and discover it.
Yeah.
Right,
so
right.
It's a perennial, you know.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to go back and watch those movies now.
Oh,
you know, I mean, that was some time ago. But
you will give yourself a treat by watching Breaking Away.
Yeah, right?
It's a very good movie.
I know. I don't remember it. I just remember that it was there in the background.
Yeah.
In 1979.
Well, you were a kid, probably.
Yeah, I was 19 in 1979, so I wasn't that young, but at the same time, I remember, I mean, there's so many movies, so it's hard for me to remember. And even 16 Candles, I mean, I don't remember the specific story. I just remember, you know, teenagers.
People talking about it.
Yeah.
And
like I said, I've seen the other ones with the same actors. So,
what was it like to work with Molly Ringwald?
Yeah.
She's very sweet, and it's interesting that John Hughes, who's written all those movies for her and others, he wrote Dennis the Menace, and wrote the National Lampoon Vacation series.
Oh, really?
And he knew how to write about young people. And what amazed me about him is when I was there at the shoot when we were doing that movie in near Chicago, that normally a director at the end of a day will go out to dinner with the cameraman and the producer, the key people, you know, scenic artist or whatever. But he would go out and have dinner with the kids. They're all of them are about 16. Then on the weekends, if there was a concert somewhere, he'd go with them. So I always thought of John as a big kid.
Right.
As a writer, he had come from the National Lampoon magazine.
Right.
Which kind of aims at, you know, kind of young people.
Yeah.
Irreverent.
I used to love reading that, man. That was funny. But at any rate, National Lampoon is not around anymore, but it definitely left a mark.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all these,
many people who came to write for Saturday Night Live were from there.
Right. John Belushi was in the movie,
Animal House,
and you know, in Chevy Chase,
Peter
and in Vacation, and all that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, God, we're like really dating ourselves, right? We're talking. Rachel is sort of like hovering.
No, I just think it's
I don't mean to make you feel bad. I just like I know. I mean, look, it's different generations here, you know. And,
I feel like I'm learning. I'm just trying to soak up all this this history.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
you know?
Look, we've got I mean, we've got a couple decades difference between us, and we have a couple decades between us. So it's like different generations, you know. And I know when people sometimes talk about things from the past, before I was born, that I'd go like, you know, I don't know what they're talking about.
Doesn't mean anything.
You know, right. You know, and like, for example, like you were talking about Buster Keaton. He was a huge actor, but he was before my time. Mm-hmm. So I've never really seen, to me, he was never big enough to, like Charlie Chaplin or, you know, actually, the other ones that came before my time.
He's very close to Chaplin. They were both worldwide known.
Right.
There's no language barrier in silent movies.
Right.
They played in the deepest heart of Africa. His face, both Keaton and Chaplin, were known all over the world,
yes.
Every country, China, yes. Japan, South America. So, you know, they were Justin Bieber and Madonna and all rolled into
original.
One. Because now we have 2,000 celebrities or maybe 5,000. Then there might have been 100 celebrities.
That's true.
And Chaplin and Keaton were among the highest recognition in the world.
Yeah.
You just had to show somebody a mustache, a derby, and a mm-hmm. cane. That was Chaplin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Buster's thing was a deadpan face and a flat hat.
Yeah. So you've got to meet a lot of people and stuff, and that's really cool. But let's get a little bit, come to the present. I want to really cover your show and what you're doing these days. So
in the last year, I've done this once before in Hollywood at a fringe festival they have.
Okay.
With 300 plays in 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
So this is a one-man show that you obviously created.
Yeah.
You wrote it, you produce it, you act in it.
Yeah.
How did this come about, first of all? Tell us, how do you come up with something like this?
Well, I don't know, starting about 10 or 15 years ago, some of the people who know me realize I had a checkered career. I did a lot of different things. I've directed and written and acted. And they said, you should write a book. And I said, if I wrote a book and people at home were reading it and laughing, I would never hear the laughs.
Yeah.
I said,
right.
If anything, I'll put it on the stage.
Right.
And then if they laugh, I'll hear it.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens.
I love it.
But I take myself all the way from a kid to loving radio, and Jack Benny and all these people, and memorizing their jokes.
Right.
Which I have this crazy thing in my head. I still know their jokes.
Wow.
I remember almost every... if I hear a comedian do 100 jokes, there'll always be one that stays in my mind. It's the best of his act.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all still there.
Wow.
I can remember things from when I was 12.
Wow.
And I, in my cool. show, you hear these voiceovers, people doing these old jokes from radio, which I still know and have written down. And I really live and breathe comedians and comedy writers, even if I'm doing straight acting and serious acting. Just
right.
My real life is fascinated by comedy and comedians.
Wow, wow.
I didn't
see,
know.
You got some stuff to learn from a veteran here, you know. So you discovered you were funny when? Early on in your life?
At first I thought I was a joke collector and interested and fascinated by it. It took me a long time to realize I could actually be funny.
Really?
I did one show in school. There was a variety show, and I thought I would try to be a performer. So I imitated Jimmy Durante and... Red Skelton, and it was only on for 2 minutes. But I got a taste of the acting bug.
Yeah.
When I was in my 20s, I developed a stand-up act, and before Johnny Carson was even there, I was on The Tonight Show with Jack Parr.
Oh, wow.
Isn't it funny? I was going to ask him, have you ever met Johnny Carson? Because he's like, you know, I mean, he was a late-night TV host, and he was the biggest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he
30
and Jack
years.
Benny.
He was 30 years on,
yeah, yeah.
on the television.
So you went on before then, even before
Another
him.
Another star. First star was right. Steve Allen.
Right.
For 2 or 3 years, then Jack Parr for 2 or 3 years, and then Johnny right. for 30 years.
Right, and that's The Tonight Show that today is being hosted by, what's his name?
Jimmy
Fallon. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the same show.
Right.
Jay Leno did it for many years.
Right.
But anyway, I did stand-up there, and I went back a few times, and then I had the opportunity to leave stand-up where you're on the road all the time with often hostile audiences, and it's really a tough grind,
yeah.
and join Second City, where I could look in the eyes of another actor and do comedy that way.
Wow.
And so I joined them, and I started doing that, so I became an improviser.
Yeah.
And all these commercials I talk about were radio commercials we improvised, my partners and I, from Second City.
Oh, wow.
So Second City, that was Second City TV, right, that you're talking about when they did
before Second City TV.
Oh, before that even. It was the, and this is where a lot of comedians came from, right?
Everybody.
Everybody came from
I worked
from
with
there.
Alan Arkin from the original company.
Really?
Yeah, and it started in Chicago, and it's over 50 years. It's still there, still open, still running, still a success.
Right.
And you can name 10,000 comedians that came out of there. Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, John Belushi,
all these everybody,
people. Everybody.
Dan Aykroyd. Yeah, everybody
there
came
was later
there.
A TV show called SCTV.
Right, right.
And that was out of Toronto with John Candy and a lot of people. And that was a version of it.
Right.
And many of those people went into Saturday Night Live.
Right.
There's a whole history of
and
this.
And then made movies as well together. And
absolutely.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember her name. Do you remember the famous one that came out? Well, I guess many went, did, but the name will come to me in a second. But
well, there's
I
a woman
her
named
being
Catherine O'Hara is a person who was in those original companies, and then I joined them. We began to make movies with Christopher Guest, with Fred Willard and Bob Balaban.
Wow,
and
see, these are
all
big
these
names.
People.
Yeah, yeah. So in the last few minutes, so tell us a little bit specifically now. Your show, you said, used to be called Upright and Personal, and now you call it Movie Dad.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the show. What can people expect? When can they see it and where?
Well, it's playing at a place called Theater West. Tickets are available online. It's called theaterwest.org.
Okay.
And it's in the Valley.
All right.
And we have six more shows. I started last week, a total of 9 shows.
Wow. And you do it almost every day, right?
Because out in New York, you can do shows like 8 times a week. But in L.A., the theater scene is nobody wants to drive their car 40 minutes on
right.
a weeknight.
Yeah, right.
So you play
so
Friday,
true.
Saturday, and Sunday.
I see.
That's
gotcha.
What happens out here.
Yeah.
Most theaters out here, if they're small theaters, they can't get audiences in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So
right.
it's concentrated on the weekend.
Yeah.
But it's full of laughs and it's full of touching moments and talking about my kid. And actually there's occasionally a tear or two from things I say about growing up with my kids.
Mm.
Not only with my kids, then I became the movie dad who seems to represent all dads and
right.
all kids. I've done about, I don't know, 30 fathers, you know.
What's your favorite dad role?
Well, I was in Breaking Away.
That one.
But and it was also a beautifully written, and 16 Candles is a good memory.
Yeah.
I was once a father to Philip Seymour Hoffman. I was a bigot who carried a rifle and a hunting jacket with shells in it, Big Chuck, and he was the school bully, Little Chuck, because
uh-huh.
he was always a little chunky, you know. But of course, if I knew he was going to become a genius legend, it might have been nicer to him.
Yeah, right.
But we both had full small parts in that particular movie.
Awesome.
But I just have met a lot of actresses. And I like the reputation of being a good dad who is also funny and eccentric and sometimes cranky.
Right.
But then in the final end, he has a heart of gold or something.
Right, right. And you've seen the transformation of fatherhood over the years as well, I'm sure. You know, fathers used to be a lot more disengaged from the family,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, my father was.
Right.
Yeah.
So so you never saw a lot of him?
Well, he was there every day. He
right.
never went anywhere.
Right.
But he would tend to come home from the factory, put his lunch bucket down, go to his workshop. He was also a carpenter and stuff.
Okay.
In fact, he built the house we grew up in. He was very skillful, but he never went to school past the 8th grade. He just learned all these skills.
Yeah.
But he didn't engage the family much. He was not mean or anything. He was just into himself.
Right.
He had grown up without a father.
Yeah.
So the characters I play in many of these movies are him.
Really? Wow. Because that was your example of
a
father.
That's what a man's supposed to be, not talking to the family.
Right, right.
Not spending much time with...
Wow. You see, that's
But that's
tough,
like a lot
man.
Of old-time fathers.
There you go. I mean,
Their
I know.
Their job is to earn a living and
exactly.
the mothers with the kids.
The breadwinners.
Exactly.
That's right.
And then later on when they become old, then they realize, you know, like the song Cat in the Cradle. You know?
Oh,
yeah,
that's I love
right.
that song.
Right? But it's so sad.
It is sad.
Yeah.
It's not that that's over. There are fathers in rural places
yeah.
just in their truck with a gun in the back and
right.
going the only bonding they can do with their son is to go out and kill an innocent animal.
Right.
But they still have a hard time hugging the kids. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
they
I
hug
know.
Hug the little girl, but not their son.
That's
so it's
true.
Very different today.
It is. You know, I mean, I was so involved with my kids from the moment they were born that I couldn't imagine anything else. You know, it's just...
Well, they just came out of a culture, their culture from
exactly,
their parents,
exactly.
where it was much more rigid and they had roles to play.
Roles, right. And people went to work early on in their lives.
And I think they believe that showing sentiment or softness made them less of a man.
Right.
So they wanted their kid to be a man.
Tough,
he's
right?
3 years old, 4 years old.
Yeah.
Be a man. Don't cry.
Exactly.
Why not cry? Crying
exactly.
is normal.
Yeah.
But I overcame a lot of that by being in the wider world and getting therapy and meeting other actors and widening out your scope. You become a different person.
Yeah.
I'm not at all like him.
Yeah.
Except I play him.
Yeah, there you go. And on that note, Paul Dooley, tell people how they can see the show again and also how they can find you. Are you on social media? Do you get into that at all? Do you have someone
look at
to
me.
Help
how
you?
Old am I? What do you think I'm I have an assistant.
29.
She goes on social media for me.
Good, good.
She has Facebook for me. She
good.
Has all kinds of things.
That's awesome.
But for me.
Yes.
Just say, tell me something funny today. Uh-huh. For the Twitter, so I'll make up some.
Tell
little.
Me something funny for the Twitter.
Yeah.
I love it.
Also, in my show, I do about a 6-minute version of saying my career has gotten slower now because it's not a part for Grandpa on every show.
Yeah, right.
So now I created a character and gave myself a new job. So I play something called the oldest living stand-up comic. And it's very strong material. I'll give you a quick example. I come out and say, I feel good today. I just paid off my student loan. 80 years old. Then at the end I say, well, that's all the time I have left, literally. But they're very, very good jokes, and it's very funny. Anyways, theaterwest.org to order tickets.
Yes, please do. And the show is ongoing right now. I see. Today's what? What's the date? Today's the 12th. So on the 14th, this Friday, you can see Paul at 8 o'clock, Saturday at 8, and then Sunday at 2 p.m., sounds cool. So we got to run, but I quickly wanted to ask you, does it get repetitive for you? I mean, you don't get bored doing this.
Not day. This, because it's my life.
Yeah.
I'm talking about my kids, my
thinking.
Parents, myself.
Yeah, there you go.
How could I get bored?
Exactly.
And you besides, just got, if there are laughs, you're not going to be bored.
Exactly. And you just got a whole hour to talk about yourself. And we really, really thank you for joining us, Paul.
Thank you.
You're
thank
an
you
so amazing
so
person. Yeah, an amazing career. Everybody go check it out. The name of the show is
Movie Dad.
Everybody, thank you all for listening. Rachel, thank you as always. And tomorrow's Thursday, so we'll see you here.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.